it wasn't too much of a burden, and that you did get attachments and materials and documents as you needed. If not, certainly let us know, and we'll make sure that they come to you. And we are also, again, always archiving these meetings as well as all the ancillary materials on our Community of Practice website. I can see in the Illuminate Blackboard session, rather, the Blackboard webinar session, the names of folks who have joined us, but I'd still like to do a roll call and just get a sense of who all is on the line with us. I'll start by just going through those that I know are likely to be available from various teams and throw it out, and then you can identify if you're with those teams. So I am Mira, and I'm with the Burton Blatt Institute, and we are working directly with the Onondaga Pathways to Careers program here in Syracuse, New York, as well as the GVRA's E3 program out in Georgia. And Michael Morris will also be joining us here from the Burton Blatt Institute. I think he had a meeting that ran up to 12, and then he's literally running down the street to his office, where he may be 2 or 3 minutes behind, and I'll just keep talking until he gets there, or maybe 4 minutes so he can catch his breath. I believe from the OPC program, we should have William and Dean on the line.
Yep, Dean is here. I'm the Outreach and Recruitment Specialist for the Onondaga Pathways to Careers demonstration project at Onondaga Community College.
Hi, folks. This is William Myhill. I apologize for the noisy background. I'm the project director for OPC. Nice to talk with you.
Oh, and I see that Pam joined us. I'm sorry, I skipped you, Pam, from the Burton Blatt Institute. You are at our Southeast ADA Center office down in Georgia, working with our Georgia project as well. And we have the Georgia team, and I believe we have a very large Georgia team. Rita, I know I heard your voice join us, and I see Greg is on the line through the webinar system, and I'm imagining that Lori and Dale and many, many others are there with you in the rooms as well.
There are about 16 of us here in the room. We're in Bainbridge, Georgia. We're very happy to be here today. Thank you so much. We're looking forward to the presentation.
Thanks, Rita. All right, and then do we have others joining us? Let's start with some of the other states that I know have pathway to career programs that we were hoping would join us. Do we have anyone from Kentucky on the line today?
Yes, this is Helga Gilbert. Are you able to hear me?
Yes. Hi, Helga.
Oh, great. I just joined in on the phone. We aren't able to download the software.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. If you have my reminder email from this morning, you would have the PowerPoint.
I do, yes, thank you.
Okay, great, excellent. And do we have anyone? I believe we may have Mike from Nebraska.
Yep, I'm here, Mira. Thanks. Yeah, Mike from Nebraska VR, just participating in the video conference. I think Janet and Zach are not able to make it today. Mira, one thing, would you be able to speak up a little bit? I'm having trouble hearing you. Can you speak into your microphone a little louder?
Sure. Sorry about that.
Hey, Mira, this is Zach Harder, also with Nebraska. Mike, I am on, but I'm just not able to get on by downloading the software either, so I'm just on via phone.
Great. Thanks, Zach, for letting me know that. I didn't know that.
And I know that Virginia may have had a conflict. Do we have anybody from Virginia? No. Okay. I know. I think Dr. Ashley had a conflict. So one of these days, I hope to schedule at a time when that doesn't happen, because I think they're doing great things out there, and we definitely want to be able to hear about it. We also have the DEI team representing various DEI career pathway initiatives, including, I believe, some new members that were just funded here in round 7, and we'll actually be getting started, I guess, officially Monday, but we might have some early joiners. So I'll ask the DEI technical assistance team to introduce themselves and then any projects.
Hi, this is David Mayer. I am a DEI technical assistance liaison from the National Disability Institute and the Career Pathways subject matter expert. And it looks like my favorite state lead at the moment from Idaho, Gordon Graff, has joined us also. And Idaho just finished up or is just in the process of finishing up a DEI Round 4 project and is now being funded for Round 7 and their first connection with Career Pathways. So I'd like to introduce Gordon Graff.
Thank you, Dave. This is Gordon. I'm just really excited to be joining with you. Dave gave me an invitation, and I just jumped at it. Thank you.
Thank you. Wonderful. Thanks. Welcome to our group. So is there anyone else that I have left out as I've gone through the teams, and my deepest apologies for having done so?
Hi, this is Rachel Anderson. I'm with NDI also, but I'm with our WinTAC team that works with a lot of ER agencies. So happy to be here.
Rachel, welcome to the group. I work with Rachel on the WinTAC as well under separate cover. Great to have you joining us, and I think the WinTAC representation is excellent for us because we know with so many of these programs touching in and around VR and WIOA really coming into a lot of enforcement and their deadlines coming up, this will be useful information and a great resource. Finally, I'm looking online and realizing I think BDI is going to collectively come in and hit me on the head. I have left off another member of our team who I see has joined us very recently.
Say hello.
Hey, Barry, how are you doing?
I'm Barry Wayland.
Can
you
all hear me?
Yeah. I'm the employment liaison for the Southeast ADA Center.
Thanks, Barry. All right, last call. Anybody else on the line with us?
Mira, this is Michael Morris. I'm with you, but I have to get to a place that will be quiet. So if you can continue to lead, I will tell you when I can join for sure.
Sounds good. Welcome, Michael. All right, so I will get started today. I'll do a little bit of housekeeping right up front and just remind everybody that sorry again for the sort of kerfuffle we had there with respect to the dates. We will consistently move now to the last Thursday of the month. I think that's just easier to schedule in calendaring systems and makes more sense than trying to count through Thursdays and discover when the first Thursday was and if it counts or not. So we'll go with last Thursday of the month for ease. That means that our next call will be the last Thursday of November, which will be, I believe, following Thanksgiving, so it shouldn't butt up into that and be too big a problem. Okay, so for today's call then, as you know, we have the agenda I sent out. We had our welcome and our introductions. I'd like to introduce our topics for today. We're going to focus on how we engage out-of-school youth, to some degree, certainly where we can access out-of-school youth, what are good recruiting points and outreach points, but also how we can engage them strategically. How do we incentivize youth who've dropped out of school to reconsider potential educational avenues that will lead them into a career pathway? And then second, a separate topic that we'll be addressing involves family support, family engagement, the family role in these projects. And I think we brought them up very briefly in a couple other meetings, but we thought these topics might be worth exploring further in a meeting by themselves. As always, we will present to you the OPC strategies. OPC will now be going into its third year, its second year of enrolling students. And all the RSA pathway programs I know will now be going into their second year. And for many, you're getting started on your enrollment if you were doing a semester approach. So it'll be an exciting time to hear from other projects. And so after we present some OPC strategies, we'd really like to focus in on the GVRA approach, their E3 model, and how they are approaching out-of-school youth and family support issues. Throughout, I would love to have some discussion. Really, if you have comments, you don't need to hold them until the end. They're welcome throughout. And then if we have time, we can just have a richer discussion at the very end. And then finally, at the end, we'll do next meeting planning and pick some topics. So definitely bookmark in your notes any topics that come up throughout the discussion that you'd like to make sure we focus on next time. I don't think I can advance the slide, so I will ask Celestia or Tao if they could move to the next slide for me. Nope, the next one, after the agenda. Yep, so we'll start with a discussion of out-of-school youth. And for background, I just thought it might be interesting to look at some national statistics that I have placed on some of these slides. Next slide. So looking at data from the current population survey, they have looked at dropout rate of youth that they define as, you know, 16 to 24 years old. I know that certainly overlaps with the age range applicable to the OPC project. Those that are not in high school or don't have a high school diploma or equivalency credential. And what we see is, you know, really across the board, the trend has been for it to drop, you know, reasonably dramatically since 1990, which is a long period of time to look at this, but we've gone from about 12.1% down to 6.5%, so nearly halving that rate. And as they point out, the majority of the drop really has happened since about 2000. This trend is across the board for all genders and ethnicities, but you do see that the dropout rate remains higher for males rather than females. And it is lower for white youth as compared to black youth, and then it's lower for both of those groups as compared to Hispanic youth. And that was true for every single year that was looked at across that 24-year period. So for our purposes, I thought it might be interesting to look at that. Next slide, please. I think just depicts the same statistics graphically. So as we can see, there clearly has been a drop-off and a fairly large drop-off with the Hispanic population that started off with much higher dropout rates. But it is interesting and instructive to see, because depending on the demographics in the regions that you are targeting, you may be dealing with differential dropout rates and different issues affecting those populations that could be taken into consideration. Next slide. Okay, so again, looking at national statistics related to out-of-school youth, but this time looking at the employment rate. And what we can see is, I presented data just from the past 5 years that they had available up to 2014. We have, you know, about approaching half of them are employed, so they are out of school and moving into some sort of employment situation. That may be one avenue through which they can be reached and, you know, incentivized to think about not just a job, but now a career, an actual pathway, and maybe re-engaging themselves with employment in that way in education. We have about, I would say, one-fifth. It varies, as you can see, across the year, but approaching one-fifth here in 2014 and definitely in 2010 as unemployed, and then looking like about a third to two-fifths that are just not in the labor force at all. So these are folks that are completely disengaged. They're disengaged from education, they're disengaged from employment, and certainly that can be somewhere where we can target some outreach. So out-of-school youth, really thinking about them for our programs is definitely a perfect target population. Next slide. Looking at this more specifically with respect to students with disabilities, again, looking at data for students 14 to 21, so not as broad an age range, under IDEA, we had data from the 2012 and 13 year as the most recent. And what they found was 65% graduated with a regular high school diploma. The highest graduation rates in terms of race and ethnicity were for white students, and the lowest were for black students. In terms of disability type, the highest graduation rates were for visual disability, and the lowest were for intellectual disability. And I don't know why I didn't put my percentages in there. Before we archive this presentation, I will update it to be specific with respect to disability type and make sure we get that information to you. 14% received an alternative certificate where they did not get a high school diploma. For the alternative certificates, we see the highest rate is with black students and the lowest rate with American Indian or Alaskan Native students. And in terms of disability type, the highest rate is for intellectual disabilities, and then the lowest rate is for speech or language. And then we have about a one-fifth, a 19% dropout rate entirely. And for that, we have the highest is with American Indian and Alaskan Native students, the lowest being with Asian students. And in terms of disability type, emotional disabilities were the highest for dropout rate, and autism was the lowest found for dropout rate. So again, similar to the previous national statistics I presented, looking at disability statistics, these again might be informational in terms of thinking about targeted outreach and how it can vary across disability type and the particular population of dropout or graduate that you're trying to reach. Next slide. Okay, so we will move into the OPC presentation, but actually before we do, were there any thoughts or questions about the background slides?
Hi, Mira. This is William. I have a question or comment, if I may. I'm thinking about the dropout rates, and I'm wondering if when you pulled that data, whether there was any specific definition for dropout, because I've been reading some literature lately that is pointing to some phenomenon around the country of push-out related to the high-stakes testing that's going on in many states. I'm wondering if you had any information about, again, that dropout definition or anything that relate to this particular observation.
So for the general national statistics, it was just without a high school diploma and, you know, not in high school and no alternative certificate. That's from the current population survey, and they didn't really define it any better than that. I imagine buried within that is this issue of push-out, as you mentioned, and so I think that's where you see it in the literature and the scholarship that you're reading. That's where they kind of tease into the data sets more and try to determine some of these issues. But the sources, the national statistics that I found, the National Center for Education Statistics, they didn't really go beyond that issue with the set of tables that I was looking at. So when I update the slide, I'll make sure to include those definitions, as you point out. And if you don't mind sending me maybe one or two relevant articles, those might be interesting for us to also put up on our community of practice site and reference, because I think you're right. I think, you know, buried under those statistics is absolutely this issue of how things have been handled, you know, and we see the greatest drop-off since about 2000. So it's, you know, interesting to look at and see what was happening around 2000 with the educational model around the country and high-stakes testing and, you know, what, if anything, is going to start to shift now with the way that that's being approached across the country. So that's definitely an important player in this, I believe, and one that's likely to be relevant for our population.
I don't know if you can hear me, but this is Greg Schmidt from Georgia, and I do have a question. Do you have the employment statistics related to just the out-of-school youth with disabilities?
I did not. I did not find those, but I can definitely look. So I don't know if everybody heard that. The question was whether we have employment statistics for out-of-school youth with disabilities, and the ones I presented were national, just general.
Thank you.
All right. So if there's no more questions, we will move on, and we will have Dean present to us about the OBC approach to targeting.
Can you hear me, Mira? Okay, just wanted to make sure my microphone is on. So my role with the Onondaga Pathways to Careers Project is outreach and recruitment. So we are a college support program, as many of you know, for youth with disabilities up to age 24 at a community college. So many of the youth in our program are coming directly from high school, and of course our grant covers students up to age 24, so we think that critically about how we are reaching out to that out-of-school youth population that is between the age of 16 to 24. So I'll talk about where we are strategically trying to access students that might be out of school, and also some of the strategies that we use as well. In New York State, the Adult Career and Continuing Education Service, Access the Arts, New York State Agency. So when a student applies to community college at Onondaga Community, applies to community college, they can complete their FAFSA information, and the tuition assistance program in New York State, which is similar to Pell Grant as well. Whatever the balance is for a student, Access VR, which is the Adult Career and Continuing Education Agency, will cover the balance of whatever the tuition is, as long as the student and their family earns less than 500% of the poverty line. So there's this idea that college is really expensive and I can't afford it. As long as the student, when they apply to OCC and completes their financial aid application, as long as they have an open case with Access VR, Access VR will cover the balance of their tuition bill. So students can generally leave OCC with a credential or a degree debt-free as long as they have an open case with Access VR. So that is really one way we try to entice students to be involved and want to go back to school and attain a degree and gain competitive employment. So I'll talk about a couple of the areas that we try to engage with out-of-school youth. So obviously, Onondaga Community College is in Syracuse, New York, and the largest school district in Onondaga County is the City of Syracuse School District, which is approximately about 21,000 students. About 20% of those students are receiving some sort of special education service, and graduation rates hover around about 60%. So the City of Syracuse has two high school counselors that are solely focused on special education transition. So we work very closely with them, and they have access to high school leaver lists, and occasionally we'll keep in contact with these students anecdotally. And well, we haven't really utilized these lists yet with OPC. It's something I've talked to the transition counselors about, and seeing how we can engage with these students and reroute them and make sure that they're being successful after they've left the City of Syracuse School District. Another entity in Syracuse is SUNY EOC, which stands for Educational Opportunity Center. So throughout New York State, there are 10 sites sponsored by SUNY that provide career and technical programs and high school equivalency programs. So this has probably been our most successful way to engage with out-of-school youth thus far. So occasionally we'll have, we work very closely with the faculty and staff at SUNY EOC in Syracuse, where they'll have youth with disabilities that are trying to get their high school equivalency and are looking to engage in post-secondary ed and want a living wage job, and they know about our program at SUNY EOC. They're one of our formal partners, so they often refer to us and I can engage with students that are in that program. More recently, we've worked with Medicaid service coordinators throughout the region, so it's not uncommon for many youth to work with a Medicaid service coordinator to help them access various supports and services appropriate to their needs. So our staff has met with various Medicaid service coordinators and their clients to discuss how our program can help fit their career interests, can help support them at the post-secondary level, and can help them move into competitive living wage employment. So me and William actually have met with a student, their parent, and their Medicaid service coordinator about 2 weeks ago to discuss our program and discuss how maybe we can meet their needs and maybe what their career interests are and how the OPC project can help push that forward. Another area that we haven't really explored yet, but we're looking to explore relatively soon, is reaching out to out-of-school youth and juvenile justice centers throughout Central New York. One of our key partners on our project, Arise, which provides transition support to youth with disabilities, they work regularly with juvenile justice centers throughout the state, or throughout Central New York, excuse me, and have made us aware of the different entities that exist throughout the region. Onondaga Community College actually had just won a grant through the Institute for Educational Leadership, the Right Turn Career Focused Transition Initiative. So this is an initiative at OCC that helps youth in age 14 to 24 in the juvenile justice system to get them back on track, to engage in career development process, to get them into sustainable living wage employment. And they just, Onondaga Community College has just hired staff for this project, so we're looking forward to working with them closely and seeing how our populations intersect. And lastly, one way we've engaged with out-of-school youth is through regional employment agencies that may have a youth program. So any type of program that's providing supportive employment, we've worked with to engage with the out-of-school youth maybe looking to enter the workforce or lack credentials for training or living wage employment. So if maybe one of our targeted academic majors is something they're interested in, maybe our project is appealing to them and we can engage with them through those means. Any questions?
Hi, this is Lori Tootin from Georgia, E3. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. So I'm not sure if the question, thank you for the information about the Medicaid coordinators, because I don't think that was one of the areas that we have on a list to try to get referrals on out-of-school youth. I appreciate that. So I had a question. Does anybody know out there in our collaborative community if there have been technical programs that have been modified for students with disabilities?
Ask
Would you mind repeating the question, please?
Oh, not at all. I was wondering if people in our collaborative communities had heard if any of the technical programs are modifying, technical schools are modifying their programs for students with disabilities. So for some that can't, you know, maybe have trouble with the entrance exam or if there's some certification, we need to find some alternative ways to have our students and youth access those programs. Has anybody heard of anything that's been modified that we could try?
So are you looking at primarily the initial access to higher ed through the admissions process and various placement testing, or are you thinking beyond that into the actual experiences and access to the instruction?
The second.
Okay. It's an interesting question, and it's something that, at least in New York State, we know that, like really any other place, colleges have to address this issue on a case-by-case, I should rather say, they do it on a college-by-college basis, what their policy is going to be and how far they push that. And I think we can say across New York State, different colleges really have kind of been more proactive than, some have been more proactive than others. Once students do get into the colleges, these technical colleges and community colleges, it's pretty common for them to have some kind of placement testing to identify skill levels that they're coming in with, as oftentimes there is a need for remedial education. And that is the case at OCC. It is kind of one of those sticking points because both the testing that is offered and required for many students is fairly difficult, and it tends to place students in some remedial courses. That said, the testing services are very good about providing essential accommodations that students are entitled to, and that's just one of those initial sort of, it's still part of the getting in the door in many respects, because students, once they have their testing done, if they have remedial coursework, then in many cases they can't really get on the track of the degree program they want to pursue until they get some of that remedial coursework behind them.
Any other thoughts from the group? Okay. Well, maybe we can move forward then, and we can hear a little bit more about Georgia's model. Before we talk about their out-of-school youth approach, I thought it might be worth just dipping back into thinking about their actual program model at large. And this dovetails with the manual that I sent out earlier this week, and again in the email this morning. You have the E3 training manual that talks a lot about their program. And Michael, do we have you back and available? Would you like to talk through this? Or Georgia, certainly you can represent yourself as well and probably a little more finesse and detail.
Mira, I just got back, but why don't we go forward and it would be for Georgia to talk next?
Yes. Lori or Rita, did you want to just help us understand your model overall?
Yes, Thank you. I'm sorry. I just dropped the speaker on the ground. Excuse me. So the E3 model, and I know some of you have been on some of our earlier calls and we've talked about it, and then you've seen and had an opportunity to look at our district training manual. But we have a goal of 3,000 students, obviously, over 5 years. We want to increase the number of customized career pathways, which is one of the reasons why I was asking about the technical schools, if anybody known, if anybody done anything innovative within the technical school that could serve the population that won't typically pass the test or typically get into technical school to access skills so that they can have a meaningful career. Integrated employment, we want to increase the number of youth, and we saw the statistics earlier, Mira, that you provided for us. And so instead of looking at those and being, well, they were quite dismal, honestly, but we want to look at it as an opportunity here that we can actually do some creative things to help students and youth with disabilities, and then increase the average weekly wage. So the district training manual that you received, we had something called the E3 Academy several weeks ago where we brought in all of the districts and the VR folks and the education folks, and we had 2 days of training where we indoctrinated them into E3, and we talked about all of our partners, specifically BBI, Southeast ADA, Georgia State University Center on Leadership for Disability that's doing our evaluation process, parent to parent, and that was all of the people that were there, and so we actually had them go through all of the information that we're going to be evaluating the E3 model on. So it was very successful, we have bragging rights to our closing speaker was actually Dr. I. King Jordan, the first deaf president from Gallaudet, and he really finished our E3 Academy on a high note, and just everything that he's went through. So I think that was very successful. And is there anything else, Greg, that you might want to add, or Rita?
Well, this is Greg, and just from a broader agency perspective, our goal at the agency is to really make an impact in the number of people we serve in the vocational rehab program, and we felt that really the way to increase our numbers was to really try to get into every school district in our state. We have about a little over 200 school districts in the state of Georgia, and unfortunately Georgia ranks, I think, third from the bottom in terms of high school dropout rate and middle school dropout rate for students with disabilities. And our national statistics a couple years ago, I think our dropout rate for students with disabilities from high school is about 64%. So 3 out of 10 were completing high school. And as you all know, if you don't finish school, you probably don't have a good chance of getting a job, at least a competitive job. And so when the opportunity came up to look at a different way to offer transition services, the E3 model was really our way of trying to see if we could create a tail that would wag the dog, is the term I use. Lori and Rita and Dale and the E3 team have really done a nice job of creating a different way of us partnering with the local school district. And we eventually believe that the E3 model is the model that we want to see in all of the 200 school districts in our state and more than 300 high schools in our state, and reaching down into middle school. And it's a very simple concept. How do we introduce youth and students with disabilities to the world of careers and work, and how do we engage them in a way that they will appreciate and that they will look forward to? And so part of the model design is really thinking outside of the traditional government box, thinking outside the traditional VR box, and trying to create a model that really is attractive to young people so that they will hopefully stay in school. But if they aren't going to make it into, say, post-secondary, that we create a pathway for them that will lead to a real job. So from an agency perspective, we think that our goal that we've set as an agency is go from serving 40,000 people with disabilities a year, serving 100,000 people with disabilities a year, and from going from putting 5,000 people a year to work to putting 50,000 people to work. And so we really think the E3 model is over time the way that we're going to change our entire VR thinking model and our approach to dealing with youth and students with disabilities.
Thank you, Lori and Greg. Our next slide, I think, just goes through some of your top-level elements to your model as well, the approach for your overall project. Lori, did you want to help us think through this, or shall we move to the next slide? I know you've
You know, I think we can move, this is Rita, we can move to the next slide. You know, we wanted to focus today on our out-of-school youth strategy and also our family engagement as well, Mira.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. Absolutely. Yes, good point. We are moving through the clock, so I'll move through the slides as well. Here's your out-of-school youth. So if you wanted to just present to us this strategy as well. I think it's very detailed, so I think it'll be instructive for us, but definitely, hopefully, we can help you with some questions, too.
So, Mira, we're here with about 16 folks on the E3 team. Charlotte Young and Janir Kidd are going to take us through the out-of-school youth. They both are on the subcommittee, or work groups, rather, that are focusing on out-of-school youth. So, first, Charlotte will speak. Charlotte Young.
So our strategy is to first develop a list of target organizations for outreach and research and establish a baseline for the out-of-school census and establish the number of youth that are currently being served by DBRA in this category. We want to create a communication plan to include marketing collateral with the support of the External Affairs Department, the E3 team, the social media technologist, and further internal resources and staff will be assigned to engage organizations for presentations and follow-up. We plan to develop a system to capture and track reasons services are being declined using our IT system.
Oh, next slide. Mira, could you move to the next slide, please? We'll have Janir Kidd, who will be taking us further on the E3 approach for out-of-school youth.
And for the strategies for the out-of-school youth, we want to make sure that we continue to follow up with the counselors as well as the teachers and finding information on what students are thinking about dropping out or even having thoughts of dropping out and making sure that they have a meeting with the counselors, E3 staff, the VR counselor, and the teacher as well to be able to discuss some of these out-of-school options and organizations that they can follow up with as well as with E3, and to be able to give them a packet of information to take with them if they have already deemed themselves, I'm going to drop out. No other options for me right now. I just want to leave school. To be able to give them also a break, maybe within the 3 to 5 months, to give them an opportunity to rest from everyone trying to guide them and give them so many options of things to do and give them an opportunity for them to make the decision for themselves as far as what do they want to do, whether they want to work, whether they want to go back to school and maybe on to post-secondary. And so just to give options through our website when it's up and running, for them to be able to visit the website and check on things about resume building or job information or videos on exploration for them to maybe get their minds wrapped around work or even wrapped around post-secondary, just to keep them engaged and making sure that they're making the right decisions for themselves to be able to be independent one day. And just make sure that we're following up with them, the E3 team, as well as the BR counselors and other school counselors, to gather information on the student, whether they are thinking about attending other options of education or even going straight to work. Next slide. We have the next slide, please. You can move on to the next one, please. And for this one, it's basically communicating with our community organizations and creating documents and making sure that everyone is on the same page and everyone has the exact same information so that there will be no kind of discrepancies between the organizations. That we have an easy way for the client to be able to sign up for services. For an easier way for clients to be able to sign up for services, whether it's in our community organizations and with E3. And next slide, please. So being able to create a marketing plan to continue to speak with external affairs about the E3 and social media technologies, and to be able to develop a tracking system to be able to capture the students that we are accepted into the E3 program and making sure that we document all of our numbers. You can move to the next slide. So one of the things that we're real excited about, this is Lori, is that the fact that with WIOA that we're going to be serving students in school as recipients, so they don't have to be on the caseload. And for VR to get in earlier, establish a relationship with the students that will lead to them being on the caseload to provide more meaningful services, I think that's a real opportunity for us to have more successful outcomes and possibly to prevent them from dropping out of school.
So this is Rita Young. We'd love to hear, Mira, we know we have quite a few folks on the line nationally, so we'd love to hear your feedback and thoughts on what the team just presented.
Are any other folks taking a get them early approach, some early outreach or early intervention of any sort that would map on? I think, Dean, you talked about our scholars program some that sort of overlaps with that.
Yeah, I can talk about scholars briefly. So that OPC scholars serves.
Jen?
I hear you just fine, Dean.
Oh, okay, sorry. OPC Scholars, Undivided Pathways to Career Scholars Program, is a way we reach 12th grade students with disabilities in the Central New York region. It's really a pipeline program for OPC and a college preparatory program to get students on campus once a month on a Saturday for a couple of hours, and we cover a plethora of topics to help them really feel a sense of confidence and a sense of belonging about going to college and about coming to our community college in Onondaga County. So we'll cover topics like career exploration, services available for persons with disabilities at college. We'll do a service learning project. We'll do a life skills development workshop. And it's really an opportunity for students to, like I said, build a sense of confidence at OCC and just feel like they belong here and know their way around and know where to access resources, and also if they do choose to attend and be involved in our program, to meet our staff before they even enroll here.
Okay, well, we will be putting, again, some of these strategy documents as well as this PowerPoint up online, and if folks have any other thoughts, please do feel free to engage us offline so that we can continue the conversation on that. Maybe for now, then, we can move ahead to the next topic.
Okay.
Look at family engagement.
Yes, just back to. Hey, this is Lori. So back, was it Dean? Did you just? I'm sorry, I missed who just told us about the Saturday event. Was that Dean?
Yeah, that was me.
Dean, I'm very intrigued by that idea. Can you send us some information on that offline?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I can get your contact from Mira.
Yes. That would be great.
Okay,
I
super.
Can facilitate that, no problem.
So, Mira, you said we were on to family engagement.
Yep, I will just move forward through there. I know we're running out of time, so we'll go through the slides on background very quickly. But just looking again at some background related to this topic. The National Collaborative on Workforce and Disability, the NCWD, has developed guideposts for success when it comes to transition. And they're certainly engaged with us at the OPC program. And their fifth guidepost does address this topic. So family involvement, the supports, and what needs to be done in that arena, particularly really engaging parents and family to understand they should have high expectations. Those should build upon strengths and interests, and they should be involved in their lives, helping them get towards adulthood. For our purposes, that may mean being involved with aspects of the Career Pathways program. They should get access to information, education, and resources. So again, some of the outreach we do may need to connect them to community-level resources if they don't already have that happening for them. Teaching them how to take an active role in transition planning, especially when it comes to this early outreach idea to keep students from dropping out, how do we get them involved in thinking beyond that process and into further education and career pathways, and certainly having access to other networks. In addition, they suggest that really you need to understand how their disability is going to affect their education or their employment or their options. Understand rights and responsibilities under the ADA, IDEA, and other legislation. And I know certainly the E3 program has built that in very tightly. They are working with our ADA center to create an ADA advocacy training curriculum so that students are going to learn about their rights, and their family members will be engaged in this as well. Have knowledge of, again, supports and services and individualized planning tools. So these are some of those recommendations that were fairly rigorously developed by the NCWD. But in terms of actionable plans for us, I'll certainly let us present on our various projects. So Dean, again, will present for OPC on family engagement strategies that OPC is using.
Sure. So in terms of family engagement, there are a variety of things that we do. Pre-enrollment into our program, then also once students are enrolled at Onondaga Community College or in OPC. So since I've begun in this role, we've worked hard to develop relationships with different local family advocacy organizations in Central New York. So I've been a regular presenter at different workshops throughout the region with different family advocacy organizations, and have become a familiar face, and have started building rapport with parents and letting them know about the various services we provide within the OPC program, and that's been a really great tool for me to, you know, introduce the program and talk about it with different families and parents and service providers that may be being accompanying them to these workshops and presentations. In Central New York, there are several school districts that have organized a special education parent-teacher association that is really a collaborative association between families and special education teachers, where they have a space to exchange information on different programs in the region, funding for those programs, changing state and federal laws, and keeping each other abreast of all those, and just to support each other in general. So that's really been on my docket for this new school year, is to be able to be involved in some of these special education parent-teacher associations. I talked a little bit about what Onondaga Pathways to Career Scholars is, and that's really our college preparatory program for youth with disabilities in 12th grade. But parents are regularly involved in the Onondaga Pathways to Career Scholars program. There is a formal parent session during the program, but also just for staff to be able to talk to parents when they're picking up or dropping off their student at the Scholars Program workshops to see how they're doing in school, to see, you know, what are their strengths, what are their career aspirations, if this parents or families are supportive of those career aspirations, and just really getting to know them on a one-on-one basis, and you know, help support that family and the student's transition. Once a student is in terms of family engagement in the program, we just started a parent family newsletter for students or for families of parents in our program. So it's a specialized newsletter sent monthly to families of current Onondaga Pathways to Career students to inform them of different events going on, different initiatives, and families voluntarily agree to receive the newsletter. So during our summer academy sessions, or during this past summer, which served as really an orientation for new students, we have parents opt in to say, yes, I want to receive the parent-led newsletter, or no, I didn't. I'm not interested. So the first one will be going out in October. We just have a draft of it that our educational coordinator drafted, so we're excited when that goes out. William, did you want to talk about the family survey?
Thanks. So briefly, we, in response to what Mira has talked about in terms of the guideposts and family engagement. While at the higher education level, we have to be very sensitive to family educational rights, and as this relates to our students being adults, what information they want to have shared with their parents and not have shared, depending upon how students have granted or not various FERPA rights, we can, of course, engage with families. When they come in, and their students brand new to the college, that's a great opportunity for us to try and initially engage with parents if we have not already done so, as Dean has discussed in terms of the Scholars Program. So what we began doing this second year of implementation of the project with students was, as students were coming in for initial intake meetings with the Office for Accessibility Resources, a meeting to which family members often come, we've offered the family a survey to learn a little bit about what their concerns are for their students, and if there are some particular supports that they feel they would like to learn about or could benefit from. And this has only just begun in the last few weeks as the intake process has been taking place. We are going to continue to collect this information, asking families to complete the surveys as we make contact with them throughout the semester. And then we hope that by perhaps towards the end of the semester, we can do an analysis of this information to see what kinds of issues come up for families, with the idea that it may helpfully inform some future programming on our part in terms of working more effectively and reaching out to family members.
Thank you, William. Now, I'm looking at the clock, and I'm realizing that we are plumb out of time. I know that we have lost a couple people to 1 o'clock appointments that need to run on. Michael, did you want to see if we could keep going to finish up, or should we bookmark this for an offline discussion in the next session?
Yeah, I think, Mira, we should not go beyond 1 because we'll lose more people. People have the slides. We can probably pick up on it for our next session, which on the last, if you go to the very last slide, will be the 4th Thursday, as Mira said earlier. And so our
no,
next
you're going with last Thursday, sorry, last
Thursday. The last Thursday. And so do we have that exact date?
I'll pull up my calendar to let you know.
And while Mira's picking up.
The 25th is the last Thursday. Oh, dear, so that really is, that's Thanksgiving.
Oh, that won't work. Wow.
So we could go to the next one or the one before that.
What's the one before that?
The 18th.
Maybe we should do that. We could publicize that out. I just wonder, because as we're out of time, anyone have a burning great idea for our next subject? We'll kind of continue, get a little bit more of the family support subject next time. But anyone would want to invite a new subject for the next one?
Hi, this is Rita Young from Georgia. We know that we've sent out quite a bit of information via the training manual and other pieces of information from Georgia. So we would just love your feedback. I don't know if everyone's had a chance to review the materials, but we would absolutely be open to hearing from you all. Thank you.
Great. Anybody else throw out an idea? Next subject? Okay. Well, because of the time limits, we will, at BBI with OCC, we'll maybe throw out a couple of ideas with confirming our date for our next call and ask for people to give us feedback, and we'll work on it that way because we have some time. But thank you to everyone who participated today. A lot of great information. Do take the time to read through all the slides and material, and we will be with you in November. So thanks, everyone, so much. Thank you, Mira, for facilitating today. Take care.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you, folks.
Wow.
Thanks.